Herzl, writing about the fact that someone who had been an outsider to traditional Judaism, such as himself, could somehow inspire so many Jews, compared himself in his short story, The Menorah, to the Shamash, the candle that is technically not part of the main menorah, but which nevertheless is the one that kindles the menorah's candles and allows the candelabra to illumine. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 160, Herzl, Vienna, and the Menorah Miracle. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. In a wonderful essay in Mosaic, Rick Richman reflects that, quote, "The story of Herzl thus presents a mystery. He came seemingly out of nowhere. At the beginning of 1895, no one would have predicted that the 35-year-old literary editor of Vienna's Neue Freie Presse would propose the formation of a Jewish state, present the idea to London's Jewish elite, publish his historic pamphlet, establish the political, financial, and intellectual institutions for a state in waiting, negotiate with emperors, kings, dukes, ministers, the Pope, and the Ottoman Sultan, hold six Zionist congresses, attracting hundreds of delegates from more than 20 countries and regions around the world, their numbers increasing each year, produce two remarkable diplomatic achievements in 1903 that set the stage for the Balfour Declaration, and then die heartbroken less than a decade after he began, in 1904, end quote. The man who seemingly emerged out of nowhere would profoundly impact the future of the Jewish people, of the Holy Land, and of Jerusalem. In our next several episodes, we'll focus on his story. It is only when we realize how surprising his tale is that we can place it in the context of the miraculous story of the Jewish people and of Jerusalem. Today we will speak of Herzl's beginnings as Zionist leader and the Vienna in which he was raised. In so doing, I will begin by drawing on the historian Robert Westrich's excellent and enormously detailed discussion of modern Viennese Jewry. While Vienna had a Jewish presence stretching back over 1,000 years, it was long a city where only a privileged few could truly partake of all the opportunities that it had to offer. That changed after the 1848 revolution in the city, which, while it did not overthrow its rulers, it nevertheless heralded an era of emancipation for Viennese Jews, setting the stage for what followed, which was a flocking to Vienna of Jews from across the far reaches of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, including the Jews of Galicia. And as they did so, these Jews sought to advance themselves as much as possible through education. Robert Westrich tells us that, quote, "In the field of education, where Jewish aspirations for upward social mobility were especially striking, the differences between Jews and Gentiles were in fact more evident than those between different classes of Jews. Nearly one-third of all gymnasium students in Vienna were Jews, and approximately one-fifth of all students in the Realschulen. The determination with which Viennese Jewish middle-class parents ensured an elite education for their children was unique, reflecting both traditional Jewish respect for learning and their post-emancipatory striving for successful acculturation and professional mobility," end quote. So Westrich writes, but, as he also notes, the response to this enormous influx of Jews into the academic and professional life of Vienna was Viennese anti-Semitism. Westrich further tells us, quote, "Though Vienna had emerged as the largest Jewish city in the Austrian half of the empire and as a dynamic creative center of Jewish life, the success story had already been somewhat tarnished by the strength of political anti-Semitism in the city since the 1880s. The mass exodus to Vienna had opened up a new world of secular modernity and unprecedented opportunities to thousands of Jews, but in its wake it also brought new problems of identity and the ominous rise of a raucous mass politics, one of whose primary vehicles was Judeophobia," end quote. One of the true hotbeds of this anti-Semitism in Vienna would be the House of Learning, where both Theodor Herzl and Sigmund Freud would study, the University of Vienna. Westrich further writes that, quote, "Since the 1880s, the University of Vienna had turned into a veritable hotbed of nationalist and anti-Semitic hostility, and this agitation centered on the pan-German Burschenschaften, student fraternities, which became increasingly violent towards the turn of the century. The racist campaign left an indelible mark on Jewish students in Vienna," end quote. Thus, Vienna in the 1890s and 1900s thus reflected the two sides of Jewish European existence, the Jewish desire for equality and acceptance, and the hatred that Jews often received in response. It was these two aspects of Jewish life in Western Europe that, as Rick Richman tells us, would consume Herzl. It was often said that it was the Dreyfus trial that set Herzl on his Zionist reflections. But as Richman and others note, this does not seem to be the case. Rather, it was the profound persistence of anti-Semitism in the center of emancipated, acculturated Vienna that drove Herzl to embrace what would become his destiny. Returning to Vienna in 1895, Herzl was shocked by the election in the city of Karl Luger as mayor. Luger had placed anti-Semitic rhetoric at the very center of his platform. Luger would be known as a man who would reconfigure the city into an embodiment of modernity, technology, and beautiful gardens. He was called Der Schöne Karl, the Handsome Karl, but he was not only an embodiment of modern metropolitan living, but also of modern anti-Semitism. And one man from Austria, Adolf Hitler, would cite Luger as a source of inspiration in his book Mein Kampf. Luger was first elected as mayor in 1895, and his appointment was opposed by the Emperor Franz Josef. And it was only after Luger was re-elected in 1897 that the Emperor relented and allowed Luger to create an administration. Herzl understood from Luger's election that Jews should not find in Vienna's modernity a sign of a future equality and embrace. In his diary, Herzl describes being present at an election in Vienna when Karl Luger appeared campaigning. Herzl wrote as follows, quote, "Municipal elections in Vienna took place the day before Rosh Hashanah Eve. The anti-Semites won all the mandates. The mood among the Jews is desperate. The propaganda against them has whipped up a lot of hatred among the Christians. Actually, though, the movement is not really noisy. In fact, used as I am to the violent demonstrations in Paris, things here seem to me, if anything, rather too quiet. I find this quiet much more ominous. Yet at the same time, one sees the look of hatred everywhere, even without the paranoid fear that makes one go around seeking eye contact. On election day, I was in Leopoldstadt, outside the polling place, to take a closer look at all the hate and anger. Toward evening, I went to the Landstrasse district. In front of the polling place, a silent, tense crowd. Suddenly, Dr. Luger stepped out into the square. Wild cheers, women waving white kerchiefs from the windows. The police held the crowd back. Next to me, someone said, with tender warmth, but in a quiet voice, "This is our Führer." End quote. So Herzl wrote in his diary, and then Herzl added, quote, "More actually than any declamations and outbursts, it was this phrase that proved to me how deeply anti-Semitism is entrenched in the hearts of these people." End quote. It is a striking passage from Herzl, all the more eerie with the hindsight of history. Rick Richman describes Herzl's perspective as follows, quote, "Vienna was Herzl's home, the capital of the Habsburg Empire, the heart of Central European high culture, where a Jewish population nearly twice as large as that of all of France resided. In Vienna, political anti-Semitism could not be dismissed as a salon for the cast-offs, as Herzl had described the Paris version. It was scoring significant political success and social influence. Austrian Jews were being accused of polluting the culture they had for a century long to join, and not simply by a benighted clergy, but by politicians and the populace at large in a democratic election." End quote. While Herzl had already reflected on anti-Semitism and the state of Jews in Europe previously in his play titled The New Ghetto, it was in 1896 that he gave the Jewish world his pamphlet, The Jewish State. It was, of course, not the first Zionist work. Earlier versions had appeared, written by Moses Hess and Leon Pinsker. And as we have mentioned, the Chovei Tzion movement had already attained achievements in the 1880s. But sometimes, as with Thomas Paine's pamphlet Common Sense, one small work can ignite a revolution that many other writers did not succeed in accomplishing. And that is what Herzl's pamphlet, The Jewish State, did. In the pamphlet, Herzl declared that the Jewish dream of finding an embrace in Europe was a fantasy. In Herzl's words, quote, "They will not leave us in peace. For a little period, they manage to tolerate us, and then their hostility breaks out again and again," end quote. Herzl argued that the creation of a separate Jewish state was the only right response. To those Jews of Europe that argued that Jews were not part of a people, Herzl responded, writing, quote, "We are a people, one people. We have honestly endeavored everywhere to merge ourselves in the social life of surrounding communities and to preserve the faith of our fathers. We are not permitted to do so. In vain are we loyal patriots, our loyalty in some places running to extremes. In vain do we make the same sacrifices of life and property as our fellow citizens. In vain do we strive to increase the fame of our native land in science and art, or her wealth by trade and commerce," end quote. And Herzl added that, quote, "In countries where we have lived for centuries, we are still cried down as strangers," end quote. Now, what is important to understand here is that Herzl's impact through the publishing of the Jewish state was different and beyond what he had intended. Herzl, in authoring this work, was seeking to normalize the Jewish people, to give the Jews a country like every other nation had. And he believed that through this normalization, through the Jews leaving Europe and founding a state of their own, anti-Semitism would disappear. But the Jewish response to the Jewish state was different. Yaakov Herzog put it best in a speech about Herzl when he wrote that, quote, "For the masses who were gripped by his message and acknowledged his leadership, the goal was not normalcy. It was redemption, that indefinable feeling and urge that had remained inviolate in their innermost souls down the ages. Herzl's dialogue with them," Herzog continued, "was therefore uneven. He spoke of liberation, independence, and normal status in terms of conventional political parlance. They answered him in terms of immortal prophecy, undying faith, and historic destiny," end quote. This reminds us that Herzl's own life is so unlikely that only a miracle explains it, and that the miracle of his life was, at least at certain points, better understood by those that rallied to Herzl's call than even by Herzl himself, so that Herzl's life reflects the larger, wondrous story of the Jewish people. But there are signs that at times Herzl glimpsed the mysterious nature of the course that his life took. Herzl, writing about the fact that someone who had been an outsider to traditional Judaism, such as himself, could somehow inspire so many Jews, compared himself in his short story, The Menorah, to the Shamash, the candle that is technically not part of the main menorah, but which nevertheless is the one that kindles the menorah's candles and allows the candelabra to illumine. Herzl wrote, describing the Shamash kindling the menorah, quote, "First one candle. It is still dark and the solitary light looks gloomy. Then it finds a companion, then another and yet another. The darkness must retreat. The young and the poor are the first to see the light. Then the others join in, all those who love justice, truth, liberty, progress, humanity, and beauty. When all the candles are ablaze, everyone must stop in amazement and rejoice at what has been wrought. And no office is more blessed than that of a servant of light," end quote. It is an apt description of an episode in Jewish history when one man with a miraculous story kindled his own Jewish spark and, in so doing, changed the Jewish world forever. The menorah, of course, is meant to remind us of miracles that occurred by Yamim Ahem in those days, Bazman Hazeh, in this time. A miracle that occurred in Jerusalem at the epicenter of the symbol of Jewish chosenness. It is meant to remind us of the menorah of the temple, whose supernaturally enduring flames reflected the very miracle that is the Jewish people. Herzl thought that upon the Jews leaving Europe and creating a Jewish state, the Jewish people would become normal and anti-Semitism in Europe would cease. Anti-Semitism has not disappeared. And what has occurred in the story of the Jewish people in the founding of the Jewish state is not a normal series of events, but rather miraculous ones. As we continue this week to tell Herzl's story and as we prepare to mark the 75th year of Israel's independence, we ponder the miracles that have occurred. And to paraphrase the blessing over the menorah, we reflect not only on the miracles of those days, but also in our time. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.